seemed like a good idea at the time. In the mid-90s, I took a master's degree in European history. And because I was going for the big bucks, I studied the Reformation. Martin Luther, Henry VIII, that stuff. Little did I know that my study of the social upheaval of the 16th century would come in handy today, studying the social media of the 21st century. And little did you know that I would be here to explain the connection to you. Lucky us.
He is funny.
So, our agenda, maybe about 14 minutes of me talking, a painless little history lesson. This is the oral dose, not the injection, there's no stent. Maybe some laughs, maybe I'll convince you that our oh-so-new social media are very much like the media that have gone before. And not because they had good Wi-Fi connections in the 16th century, because they didn't, but because people tend to use the media available to them for much the same human purposes over time. During that time, I'll decrypt the handouts that you have there, and then we'll move on to what I hope will be a complete throwdown, free-form Q&A. In my car, in the trunk, I have a jumpsuit and a cat in the hat, stripey hat. We can turn this into a rave. I mean, okay, so Martin Luther, who was he? To remind you, it's been a long time since you've had history class, probably. He was a priest in Germany who worked in the first half of the 1500s. He wrote the 95 Theses. They got nailed up to the church door. Maybe you've heard of this. He protested Protestant against Rome and its excesses, and ultimately the movement he started split the Christian church in Western Europe. To paraphrase one Burden, who was kind of a big deal. So to get an idea of what he meant in his day, you might take an influential political blogger, somebody like Andrew Sullivan, except maybe cross him with Stephen King's bestseller, and then cross that with maybe Gandhi for social upheaval, and then cross that with like Shakespeare, because Luther had the same role in the modern German language that Shakespeare had for the modern English language. He was a pretty smart guy. So, we're in 16th century Germany, we got lots of social upheaval, so what? What does that mean for us today? Well, the way that Luther gained so much influence is of interest because he used, listen, a new form of communications technology that had recently gotten substantially cheaper and enabled the formation of new communities of interest around new ideas. Sounds familiar to us today. Okay, so I'm phrasing that to support my thesis, but stick with me. Some of what Luther did was ancient. People have been using the written word to convey religious concepts, I mean, for ages. So all the major world religions, we see that. And they had also been using it to build community for ages. Any of you who ever went to Sunday school will remember Paul's epistles to the early Christian churches. Well, that's written down communication to build community. And that's where the technology stood until about 30 years before Luther was born, when a man named Gutenberg operated the first movable type press in Europe. And what was the very first thing he printed?
A Bible.
Not a coincidence. Up until then, and for a few decades after Gutenberg, books were the province of the very rich or the very educated. They weren't for general consumption, and that was just as well, since most people couldn't read anyway. So what were the media that most people used if the print media were off limits to them? I was talking before about access to technology. Well, most people didn't have access, either because of money or because of illiteracy, to the printed word. So what media did they use? It's worth it.
Word of mouth.
Word of mouth. Very good. It's worth it to think about what medium means. Medium is a means of human communication. That's all. And the media that they use was they talk. My talking to you here, we don't think of this as media, but I'm using the medium of speech. This is what we might call narrowcasting, one to a few. And when we think about it, depending on the venue, depending on the right technology, human speech can be personal media, one-on-one. I can have a conversation with just you. Narrowcast, like this. It can be broadcast, mass media. And then it can go beyond that into a many-to-many, peer-to-peer transportation and mutation of messages, which is a lot like what we call social media. Okay, keep in mind that in Luther's day, a preacher with a powerful voice could stand up at the pulpit in front of a church or on a balcony in a town square and talk to hundreds of thousands of people at a time. They could all get the message at the same time, and then immediately what they would do is talk about it amongst themselves. Again, it's primitive in comparison to the technology we have today, but it is a form of social media, I would argue. Let me make this argument here, and I hope we'll pick up on this in Q&A. Sometimes we confuse ourselves with overly narrow definitions. We think that media has to refer to our modern mass media. One of the most effective mass media in the old days was a town crier, a royal messenger, someone who would read out proclamations or recite instructions from the authorities or this kind of thing. It's not very different from a peanut vendor at a baseball game today. It's narrowcasting if we compare it to the Wall Street Journal or HBO, but just because it's not technologically enhanced the way we think doesn't mean it's not media. Okay, so what did Luther actually do with all of this? He and his followers took this new technology of printing, which again had recently come down in price, and they joined it with these existing oral media, already common in German society, to create this upheaval in the German society. So Luther would preach a sermon, somebody would write it down, that would get printed up, and that pamphlet would then get carried around all over the place. And where did it go? It had these second and third and fourth lives as it spread out across the German lands. So for instance, a small town preacher might take that pamphlet, and he might use it for a sermon, maybe verbatim, or maybe he put his own spin on it. This is essentially early modern Tumblr. Or that pamphlet might find its way to a tavern like this. This was a social setting that was common in early modern Europe. So one literate person would take that pamphlet and say, here's what Dr. Luther has written, and he would read it out. And maybe 40 people would hear it, and then they would discuss it. This is essentially early modern blogging. Or a printer in another town might get that pamphlet and reprint it himself. He might try to refute it, or he might add to it, or there might be errors or omissions or whatever. It's worth it to think about peer-to-peer file distribution when we think about this. You get the point. There's one message, there's multiple means of transmission into that audience that Luther was trying to reach. And note how easily the message jumped from one medium to the next. When we think today of what we call old media, like a magazine, we think about how one medium contains multiple messages. Like, I get my copy of The New Yorker and it has multiple stories in it. But the reverse has always been happening too. One message, one meme, jumps from medium to medium to medium, no problem, because humans want to communicate. All right. So, the technology today speeds it up immensely, but it's not fundamentally different from what's come before. So now, thinking about Luther's message, we find at least three things that are distinct from the content of the message itself, and they're distinct from one another, and here is where the little triangular diagram is going to come in handy, and I will decrypt it for you. This is going to be even more important in a minute when we get to the 21st century, and how we might be able to make some money for ourselves. So C is for content, there are the users, that's the U, for Luther's audience, there are the technologies being used, that's the T, and then that dollar sign, it stands for the commercial relationships that are involved. It's worth thinking about how these things work before we ever get to today in internet land. So let's talk about Luther's case. Mostly, he didn't care about the technology. He'd write it up, he'd preach it, he wrote hymns, he wrote in German, he wrote in Latin, whatever. It was important to him to get the message out because he thought people's souls depended on it. And a lot of the people he talked to, they thought so too. So it was the message, and then whichever technology they could use, there it went. The technology did matter to some of the audience because it mattered whether you were literate or not, and if you were going to try to refute him. Well, did you have access to a printing press? Could you afford it? Or were you going to have to stand up and preach? Did you have a church you could preach in, or were you going to have to preach on a street corner? You can think about that. There were some technological access issues there. This makes me think of, you know, those people who were illiterate and couldn't get hold of the message if it had been trapped on the page. It makes me think of the folks in the developing world today where the internet does not mean computers. We have the luxury of thinking internet means, you know, there's your laptop open with a good Wi-Fi connection. But for these folks, it means mobile, and if it stayed stuck on the desktop, they wouldn't have access to it. Worth thinking about. Now, and you can also think about the commercial interest, which in Luther's case was primarily the printers. They didn't make money off royalties. There was really no copyright protection. But printing Luther's works in the 1520s was like, I don't know, being Radiohead today and releasing a new album. Even if people were going to pay what they want, people would be willing to pony up for it. By the way, these printers weren't building media empires because it was too early, too fragmented for the mass media to take hold like we think of it today. Now, we're going to skip ahead. We're going to bring you out of the 20th, out of the 16th century, into the 20th, and into our own human memory. Keep all these factors in mind while we think about Mr. Bob Hope. Think about this. From the time Bob Hope started in show business as a child until he reached middle age, he was successively the biggest draw on vaudeville, and then on the radio, and then on Broadway, and then in the movies, and then on television. Okay, well, so he did all of that with basically the same content, basically the same shtick. You think about it, the medium changed, and he had new topical material, new jokes all the time, but that same, you know, his patter, the timing he had, the wisecracks, the touchy ego, that was all in place by the time he was headlining on vaudeville, when he was in his 20s. So why did he succeed commercially in all these different media? Think back about the little triangle there. partly it's historical. His career happened to coincide with all these different media changes. The society went from vaudeville to TV in like 30 years. Partly it was because Bob Hope was this awful black hole of human neediness, and he had to be in the spotlight at all times to feel validated as a person. But the biggest factor was that his content could port commercially across all of them. That dollar sign was always in place because it fit the economic engines of all those different media. People want to laugh, and they'll pay you if you can make them laugh reliably. And Bob Hope made people laugh reliably. So there's the end user and the commercial interest rolled into one, and that's what made Bob Hope a very rich man. Okay, now let's move on to the mimeograph. We're picking up steam. Why do I have that listed? Because I want you to think for a minute about how the mimeograph was a social medium, too. How many of you got handouts in school run off on a mimeograph? Maybe church bulletins? Music zines, right? How many of you, when I ask that question, you can smell the smell? Bruce has nothing on us with his Madeleine, right? And I'm very sorry that I could not find a mimeograph. Okay. We don't have time to go into the history of the mimeograph, which I swear to you is fascinating. But I want you to think about how it was an amazing sort of narrow cast medium. It basically fell between the one-on-one written media, like if I write you a note on a piece of paper, and that's on the one side, and like a newspaper, big mass media on the other end, and the mimeograph was somewhere in between. It allowed you to do on the cheap what those printers back in Germany did for Luther back in the 16th century. You could communicate directly with a limited group of people. Twitter?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, you could use the pamphlets in Martin Luther's day, but you didn't have to go to the print shop. You could do it on the fly. You could print only as many as you needed. And you didn't much have to worry about the economics of the thing, which was good, because in many cases, mimeographs were used for things that didn't have a direct commercial interest. Printing class handouts or church bulletins or that kind of thing. You could get some indie cred, you know, if you had your zine that covered the music scene in Waukegan or wherever you were, but you probably weren't going to be able to quit your day job because of that. So it was a very strong medium for the end user, for building community. It was a great technology for the narrow casting, but not so great in commercial terms if you were going to try to get rich off of it. Okay, quickly, Steve Jobs, what about it? Apple hasn't made big waves in the social media, as we commonly think of the social media, but it's worth a moment to ponder, for the millionth time, I'm sure, how Jobs helped redefine a major mass media. Which one do I mean? Recorded music. And he did it by marrying good enough technology with a pretty sweet user experience and an extremely sweet commercial model. Right? And it's had big impacts. Not so great on the peer-to-peer side, but, you know, you can't have everything. So let's bring it all back home. Over this broad sweep of time, these very different examples, what do we see? There's content, which could be conversations, it could be news, it could be literature, it could be commentary, it could be music, it could be religious revolution, it could be cash money. Think about what content does Western Union trade in today? Cash money. There's the end user who may or may not be a content creator, who may or may not care about the technology. This is code for may or may not care about your technology. And who may or may not have a stake in the commercial model of the medium. That's code for may or may not feel the need to pay you anything for what you're getting paid. They may not have a stake in your sweeping kind of social or theological reform either. Then there's the technology itself. Most of us here care about the technology of social media 10 times more than the average social media user. My wife loves her Facebook page, and she gets in touch with her college friends or her high school friends on Facebook. And I can tell you, she doesn't care. She doesn't give a damn about Facebook's, you know, how they're going to make money or how much money they're going to make or what their valuation. She doesn't care. She couldn't be made to care. We care because we're building it, we're helping deploy it, we're helping create it. But sometimes we forget that. For the purposes of social communication, the human voice is also a medium. Pencil and paper is also a medium. Smoke signals are a medium. There's all kinds of mediums, all kinds of media. If we happen to fall in love with the technology, that's great. I love the technology. But just because we do, that might not be either here nor there for the end user, and especially on that commercial question. I grant you that the social media, as we usually talk about it, yes, the technology makes a heck of a lot of difference. But I hope I've helped convince you that the technology is not everything. So finally, there's the commercial interest, which for many of us in this room translates to business model, or monetization plan, or words to that effect. I think it's important for us to pause a second to remember that social media is not a synonym for social media marketing. How many of you read, you know, and you know, me pontificating on my blog or whatever, and I'm talking about the social media do this, and the social media, and our goal is to do that, and what I'm really talking about is social media marketing. Or maybe I'm talking about social media's IT spending applications or ramifications. Or maybe I'm talking about how I could get rich in social media. But I'm not talking about social media as a thing that exists independently in the world. So before we move on to a discussion, which I hope will go down in history like Woodstock, I want to leave you with this sort of summary. From Martin Luther's day down to this, the interplay between the social sphere and the media has always been complex, and it's always involved personal media, narrowcast, broadcast, and many-to-many kind of discussion that we could call social media. Technological change has always unsettled that interplay, always. And it's always led to unpredictable social, commercial, and personal changes. I believe it's worth it for us to open our minds to the ways that social media is not so new if we want to understand how to shape the world of social media that we're living in today. Okay?